picked up the difference right away. And the difference was this, that at the NSI, you know, everybody kind of came and kind of looking around, kind of looking at somebody, that is, and so on. And here, I walked in and everybody was, "Hi, how are you?" And they were talking to one another like they had just met an old friend they hadn't seen for a long time. And so in some ways, we're starting out here, hopefully, in our relationships, our anticipation of fellowship together, like we left at the NSI. Now, I would like to ask you to turn to a passage of Scripture. It's in Philippians chapter 1. I came to the Philippines a couple days early because I felt the need just to have a day or so alone with the Lord. And during that time, I began to pray and just said, "Lord, is there some passage that, first of all, you want to speak to me about concerning the CMC?" And is there some passage that maybe could relate to all of us? Just in not so much the ministry of the CMC, but in regard to our time together. And the 2 days that I was pretty much alone, both days this passage came to my mind. I'm not going to preach any long sermon on it, but I'd like to share it with you. And if you'll turn to Philippians chapter 1, we're going to read verses 3 through 10. "I thank my God every time I remember you." And as I prayed over that verse, I thought, you know, that's what I need to do. I need to pray for each one coming to this conference and just thank God upon every remembrance of you. And the thing that stood out to me was the need to not only express to God in prayer our appreciation for one another, but to express, as Paul was expressing in this letter, his appreciation for one another. And I really appreciate you. Your love, your faith, your dedication, your vision, the sacrifice. There are 30 different personalities in this room, and each one is unique, and each one is different. And God would never want you to be different than you are. He made you this way. We appreciate you. And then the next phrase, "In all my prayers for you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now." Paul prayed with joy. And the reason he could pray with joy is he enjoyed those people. And my thought was, you know, I tend to be so intense in trying to accomplish an objective, I don't take time to enjoy the people. And I hope that this week can be a week where we will really enjoy one another. And the thankfulness, the appreciation, that not only is an appreciation, but it bubbles over into a joy that we're partners together in the gospel. We're partners together in the community ministry. And I look at each one of you as a very precious gift from God to the Navigators. And we're partners. And I'll have something more to say about partners a little later. And then, verse 6, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to the completion, until the day of Jesus Christ. Not only appreciation that overflows with joy, but an expectant confidence. God is in you. God is at work in you. God is going to complete and perfect you and your ministry until the day of Jesus Christ. Kind of an excitement, an expectancy, a confidence. And then in verse 7 and 8, it is right for me to feel this way about all of you since I have you in my heart. For whether I am in chains or defending and confirming the gospel, all of you share in God's grace with me. God can testify, or another version, God witnesses how I long for you all with the affection of Jesus Christ. And I see in these two verses, I have you in my heart. God is my witness how I long for you with the affection of Jesus Christ. I pray that this week together will not just be a week of ministry, philosophy, and strategy, but it will be a week where God is putting one another in our hearts with the affection of Jesus Christ. I don't know what Paul meant here in verse 8. I don't know if Paul was saying that I have the same affection that Jesus has for you. Now, I'm sure he was saying he had the same kind of affection, the same in kind, in quality. But I don't know if he was saying I have the same in intensity and fullness. Now, whatever affection we have for one another, it is the love of the Lord in our heart. One another. We all have that same kind. I certainly don't have the same intensity and quantity of affection that Jesus has for you. I don't even have it for my wife or my children. But that we might have one another in our hearts with the affection of Jesus Christ, and that God will witness this. We don't have to show it and prove it to one another. That's not it. That God will witness this. And then there's another thought in verse 7. All of you share in God's grace with me. We are all partakers of God's grace. And you know, it's only God's grace that can perform this affection and this love of Jesus Christ in our hearts. What am I trying to say? I think I'm trying to say that I hope that our time together this week will not be like a professional business conference where we're talking about how we can do the business more effectively. That is, the business of the community ministry. But there will be another dimension in this, that it will really spring from the grace of God and a love and an affection of Jesus Christ in our hearts for one another. Now notice what happens if this is the case. Philippians 1, 9 and 10 and 11. And this is my prayer. It's interesting that he says, and this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight. Paul is modeling this love for them, and then he says, this is my prayer, that you will abound more in love. And what did he model? He modeled an appreciation for one another, an enjoyment, a confidence, a heart, an affection. And it was a result of the grace of God. And how do we receive grace? Well, Hebrews 4:16. We come before the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help. It's a result of prayer. Now note what he says here, that our love would abound, and flowing out of this love for one another will come a knowledge, an insight, and a discernment of what is best. You see, love produces the atmosphere of learning. And so we pray for love that will produce knowledge, insight, and discernment. It also, love also produces an atmosphere to grow in Christ-likeness. So that you may be able to discern what is best and be pure and blameless until the day of Jesus Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ. Pure, blameless, filled with the fruit of righteousness, and the result to the glory and the praise of God. So I just wanted to share this passage with you as a passage that I want to be praying over for myself and for you, and to see through God's grace that this is put into practice in our time together. I don't know about you, how you come to this conference, but I know about me. I've come to this conference tired, having been under, for some months, a very pressurized schedule, having gone through one of the most difficult years in my life physically and in family situations, and so on. And I want to be refreshed. And I know that we can be refreshed as we put these verses to work in our life, our relationship, our walk with the Lord, our fellowship with one another. Now I want to give you a little background on the Community Ministry Council. I have had a growing burden concerning the community ministry ever since I took this job here in Penn. I see the community ministry as the ministry of the future. What do I mean? We will always, I think, be in the university ministry. It will probably be the foundational ministry, that where we recruit and develop young and new laborers for Christ. But from that ministry is the birth of the community ministry. And the community ministry is the ministry to penetrate a society, a nation. The university ministry may be foundational, it may be the beginning, but the community ministry is the penetration into a society, into a nation. It involves, as I see it, also the missionary thrust within a nation. It is the ministry that relates to the rest of the body. Relating to the body becomes in focus in the community ministry. It's not all that important in a university ministry. People are out of their community family context. They're in a university for a short period of time. You don't have to relate to the body too effectively, too critically in a university ministry. But the rest of the body of Christ is there in the community. I think there is a need, and only God can provide this. I cannot, and this council cannot. But we need a burning vision and calling that captures the imagination. Our imagination, and the imagination of the up-and-coming laborers and leaders in the Navigator ministry in each country. We read in Proverbs, where there is no vision, the people perish. And I would like to paraphrase that, where there is no vision, the laborers stop laboring. What's happening to our labors? I remember coming to Pan. I started studying the statistics, and I was amazed at the number of new disciple makers and ministering disciples that were being produced in Pan over the years. And so I added it up, and I forget, it was up there in 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, somewhere in there. It was a huge number. I thought, oh man, we are on the crest of making an impact in Pan. And then, of course, the old question. Where are all these laborers? What are they doing? And I thought, you know, there isn't a vision, a sense of calling, a well-defined task that is understood and has the ring of truth in it in the hearts of our laborers to say, this is what I want to give my life to out there in the community. Now, why aren't we recruiting laborers and staff for the community ministry? I don't know. Maybe it's just a matter of coordination. I remember in one country I asked one work who were in need of a certain type of university graduate to get into their ministry, which was more out in a community type of context. And I said, well, now, how do you coordinate with the university ministry to identify some of these labors that you need to get into your community ministry? Oh, we've never done that. Years of having the two ministries, but there's never been any coordination. Maybe that's the reason. I don't know. Some people say, well, we're not training our laborers right. And they're not being trained in a way that they fit into the community and can labor into the community. Maybe that's the reason, or one of the reasons. I don't know. Some say, well, I'll tell you what. Our graduates, when they leave the university ministry, they're down on the navigators. We have used them. We've burnt them out. And when they leave, they don't want to have anything to do with the navigators. Now, how much that is true, I don't know, but that's what I hear. And then I wonder sometimes, I've heard this too. The community ministry in our country is not challenging enough. It doesn't have a sense of vision and direction. Everyone seems to be doing their own thing in their own unique personal way. And it's not catching the imagination of the people that we've developed as laborers. I am not trying to say this morning where the problems lie. I'm just trying to share some of the things, some of the feedback that I get, and what I try to say, well, how can we get this community ministry defined and moving? Because it is the ministry of the future. It is the ministry that will impact the society or fail to impact the society or a segment of the society, whatever part we're to have. Then there was a second thing that was moving on in my mind and heart that helped create the CMC. The first was simply a growing burden for the community ministry. The second was a growing desire to get together with some of our Asian reps. I get together with the NDs quite a bit. But I felt over the last couple years, you know, I'd like to just get together with some of the Asian reps. And I'd like to listen. I'd like to know, I'd like to interact with them on the ministry. What are they wrestling with in the ministry? I'd like to learn from their experience. What are they experiencing? What are they learning? I'd like to understand the questions they're asking. What questions are they asking? I'd like to know what they think and how they think. I'd like to be able to identify more with them and their prayer burdens. And so out of these two desires came the idea of a community ministry council. And this is a council. We didn't call it a seminar. We didn't call it a conference. We called it a council. Why do we call it a council? Because we want each one who comes to be a counselor. I think I have a slide on this. We want each one to be a counselor. You have something to share. You, most of you, are out in the community ministry each day of the week. You have something to say. And we want this to be a forum in which you have the opportunity to say it. And if each one has come as a counselor, then each one should also come as a learner. Because if we've got 30 Indian chiefs and no Indians here, everybody who's going to counsel everybody and nobody who's going to learn, we may as well turn it into a week of prayer. Pray about the things we want to counsel and bring them to God. Because only He's the only one who will do anything about them. So each one is a learner. I've come here to learn. I have not come here to tell you how to do the community ministry. I don't know how to do it. Each one is a partner. Paul, when he prayed for these people, he prayed with joy that they were what? His partner. We want to come as partners. We want to put aside titles. There's no RD here. No national director here. Jerry, what is your title?
You don't want to know.
Okay, well anyway, whatever title Jerry's come with, he doesn't have it here. We don't want to, we just want to be partners. There's no hierarchy here. Somebody's got to organize the thing, somebody's got to coordinate it. But we're partners. And then we're more than partners, we're brothers. Sisters. We're equals. So I've married these two desires, a growing burden for the community ministry, a growing desire to interact with some of our more mature, experienced reps, and especially those who are in the community ministry. And so the baby that's been born is the community ministry council. Now I'd like you to turn in your book to the objectives of the CMC. Jim, what page is that on? That's in the first section, I believe. First section of papers, about the second page down. First objective, I've already commented on, to learn from one another's knowledge and experience in the community ministry through messages, discussions, panels, reports, personal interaction. Everyone a counselor, everyone a learner. Two, that each one personally benefit from deeper international friendships, clear understanding, stronger motivation, and greater ability to community minister. Three, to clarify and apply the NAV vision, calling, identity, and philosophy to the community ministry. Four, to identify the key issues and functions in the community ministry and formulate enabling guidelines. And we'll be discussing, Jim Kennedy will be sharing with us a little later some ideas on how to formulate these guidelines. 5, to lay the groundwork for national community ministry strategies. We are not going to develop national community ministry strategies at this week. We hope we can lay some groundwork for that. I'm not sure that in New Zealand they would appreciate, for example, one representative being here at this community council and then go back to New Zealand and say, now here is our national strategy for New Zealand. I know the Kiwis well enough. I don't think that they would appreciate that. And probably it would be true in some of your countries as well. But to lay some groundwork for this. Now, on the last section, we have the promises which we sent you. And that's in the very last section of your notebook. And I really want to encourage you to, during this week, to really claim these promises. There is a power and a strength in claiming the promises together. And in your prayer meetings, as you pray over the for the CMC, let's be sure we're claiming these promises. I won't take time to go into them now, but I would like to say this, that I think the turning point in the NSI, and I got a number of testimonies who said this, the turning point in the NSI, in their experience, was when they began to pray over the promises that we had sent out. And we found that when the NSI started, that these promises were already in effect. They were functioning. I think that one of the big lessons that I learned at the NSI, and I would call it a golden nugget, and that is that more important than working out an agenda, more important than preparing for a conference, even preparing messages, is to be able to marshal together promises that relate to that ministry project, whether it be an NSI, CMC, or some ministry project you have out in your community ministry. That we work under the principle of grace. God pouring out His Spirit and His goodness and His truth upon us as we claim promises in prayer. So let's be sure that we're emphasizing that. Now there's one other objective I want to mention, which I'd like you to write down. And that is what I just illustrated. We want to discover golden nuggets, new precious truths or insights that will greatly affect each one's community ministry. In fact, this is what we want to leave the CMC with. I'll read it again while you copy it down. I want to explain what I mean by it. Now, a golden nugget I discovered at the NSI last year was this golden nugget. In preparation for any major ministry thrust, The most important thing is to marshal some of the promises of God and get everyone claiming them in prayer. That was a golden nugget. When I first went to Europe, we discovered a golden nugget in our missionary approach. When I first went to Europe, there was one woman working with the navigators in England, Joyce Turner. There was one man working with the navigators in France, George Clark. There was one man working for the navigators in Germany, Bob Hopkins. There was one man working for the navigators in Denmark, Bob Wilbraham. And there was one man working for the navigators in the Netherlands, and his job was also Europe, and that was Doug Sparks. Because the navigators believe in the potential of the individual. The navigators believe a little one will become a thousand. The navigators believe 2 Timothy 2:2. One teaches one, who teaches another, who teaches another. But it didn't work. The navigators' ministry in Europe was stuck in the mud. And the mud was a concept that one man can do everything. And so, God brought together to the navigators during that period of time, not only in Europe but in other places, the golden nugget of truth, the insight that you need a small team, two or more, banded together to significantly make pioneer a new ministry. And we had been blind. Paul had that. He had man-to-man, but he also had the team. Now, we have not come here with an idea of what those golden nuggets will be. In fact, to give you a little idea of the spirit of this conference at this point in time. Last night, I came in and Jim and Ron got me aside and they took me and pinned me down and they said, "Now, Doug, we like the idea of coming up with golden nuggets." And I thought, coming up with golden nuggets? What in the world are they talking about? And then they explained it. And I said, "Yeah, you're right. We cannot leave this conference and find a lot of effectiveness in a big, thick notebook full of paper and with scores and scores of guidelines. But we need to distill it all down to a few golden nuggets that will make a permanent difference in our lives and ministries." And this is what I mean. Now today, we are going to take time, if you've looked at the schedule, to select key issues. And once we've selected the key issues, we then are going to rewrite the schedule. The schedule you have in your notebook is not the final copy. It is what we would call the first draft. The first draft. And so the first thing you're going to do, and I will explain how you will do this, is you're going to select key issues today. And then during the rest of the week, we're going to discuss those key issues. And then on some of the most priority issues, we're going to formulate some guidelines. Guidelines that would enable you in that aspect of the community ministry. They're not policies. They're not something you must do to be a faithful navigator. They are simply enabling guidelines that you may find helpful in your ministry. And out of those guidelines, as well as out of other things in the conference, we want it to sift down to where we have four or five very precious golden nuggets. A new truth or insight that will greatly affect and improve your community ministry. We cannot predetermine what these are. But there will be an evidence. We will know it when we find it. You know why? Because if we were all going out looking for golden nuggets and somebody found a big, beautiful golden nugget, everybody would get excited, wouldn't they? They'd say, hey, look it, he found a golden nugget. Look at this big golden nugget. Think in Australia, they found the biggest golden nugget in the world some time ago, and of course it hit in all the newspapers. Everybody was excited about this huge golden nugget. Now you may come up with what you think is a golden nugget, and everybody else will, that's not gold. We have the phrase in the United States, you know, you find something that looks like a golden nugget, they call it fool's gold. But when you find a real golden nugget, everybody gets excited about it. So if you get some golden nugget nobody's excited about, well, maybe you can go and prove to everybody else it's a golden nugget. We wouldn't stop you from doing that. But probably the conference or the council will not claim that it's a golden nugget. Now, there are two kinds of golden nuggets we want. Try to find. We want to find golden nuggets that we think are golden nuggets in throughout Pan. And then we want to find golden nuggets that might be a golden nugget in Indonesia, but not in the Philippines. It might be a golden nugget in Japan, but not in Korea. Or whatever the case may be. Maybe a golden nugget in Malaysia, but not in Singapore. So we'll come maybe with a few golden nuggets that we think are golden nuggets for the whole, and then maybe a few golden nuggets that are kind of national golden nuggets. They fit in that culture, they fit in that situation, and other countries will say, God bless you, that's gold in Japan, but it's not gold in Indonesia, or whatever. Okay? Now, I want to discuss with you the schedule. That's this little thing here in the first page of your book. And I really want to emphasize this. Because it's typed out, it's printed, it looks as though it's final. And it really isn't. You know, just to demonstrate, we can just kind of tear it up, throw it away, and start all over. But the reason we've got this here is we've worked this agenda out in the line of the questionnaire. that the first day, what we want to spend our time on is finding out from you what are the real issues. I can't tell you what the real issues are. I am behind a desk in Singapore. I'm on a jet airplane. I'm sitting talking to national directors and their planning teams. I'm not out where you are. And so what we want is to make a list. Have we passed out a new list, or should we just use the... Okay, just pass them out, Steve. I want to apologize for the... give me one, too. I want to apologize for the faintness in this copying machine. There is some problem with it. And we will try to get things done in town so that you'll have more effective eyesight. Now, after this session, there'll be coffee, and then you're going to be on your own till lunch. As you sit there with a blank piece of paper before you, and you list down what you have brought in your mind and your heart as a key issue in the community ministry. It comes from within you. If you don't have any, that's all right. If you spend a whole hour writing down 150 key issues that are in your mind and your heart, and you don't have time for anything else, that's all right. That's where you begin. What you come with. Not what you got from the questionnaire we sent you or anything else. It's what you come with. The second thing is we want you to read the questions in the questionnaire and check those questions which you think are key issues. Just put a check by it. Now, you'll turn over to the second tab and you'll see that Jim Kennedy and Steve have put a tremendous amount of work, as well as the secretarial staff there in the Penn office, a tremendous amount of excellent work in compiling the answers of the questionnaires that were sent out. We were very encouraged by the excellent, thought-provoking answers that so many of you gave. We were also very encouraged that not everyone was saying the same thing. And even that some would probably be in conflict with others in their ideas. That's good. So what we've done, trying to be true to the person and his answers, we have summarized and compiled the answers. Now this is 40 small typewritten pages. We are not asking you to read through this summary today. We are asking you to read through the questions. They're all in bold print. And the questions are the questions you've answered in the questionnaire already, so it's review. It's not something new to you. And just tick those you think, this is a key issue. We really need to get into this. Then, having looked at your list and having looked at what you've ticked, there may be, and that's number 3 in this paper we've turned, given you, there may be some that you're saying, well, I'm not sure whether this is a key issue or not. There seems to be so many things here. And so you might want to read the summary under that answer, under that question, here in this page, on these pages. And that gives you a little more idea, what are people saying about this? Yeah, I think this is really a key issue. Well, you know, this isn't all that key after all. So you only choose the summaries you want to read to see if that will help you select key issues. Then the fourth thing, don't do it with my schedule because I just tore it up. But don't tear your schedule up because we want you to use it. Then go through the schedule and look over the agenda and check what you think is not a key issue there. Because there may be something on the first draft of the agenda that's not all that key. It may appear key, you know, as you read through the questionnaire or something, but it's really not that key. You don't think it's that key. Or there may be some things on the schedule. For example, we've got three sessions. We've got a message on recruiting. We've got then a discussion on recruiting. Then we've got formulating guidelines on recruiting. And then we've got report of those guidelines on recruiting. Well, you may say, well, recruiting is a major issue, but I think maybe we should only have it once or twice. I think maybe a discussion on it's good enough. Don't have to go into all those other things. For example, as I prayed over the schedule in my mind, it may not be in yours, and if it's not in yours, you will go with what you want to do. But I looked at that those first few days, and I thought, boy, we got three different sessions on philosophy. Yeah, maybe we only need one. Or two. But do we really need three? And I thought, you know, I could do a little changing of that schedule and we could get ourselves a day ahead by just not spending so much time on philosophy. And get into maybe more practical things. Maybe where you're scratching is more the practical than the conceptual. On the other hand, if where you're itching is the conceptual, and we need three or four times on philosophy, we can do that. Okay, then you check the things that you think are not key issues that are on the schedule. And the fifth thing, you take from one and two and make your final list of key issues. And then what you'll do in your discussion groups, you'll get into your discussion groups. We're asking the discussion groups to sit together at the tables for lunch and just kind of get to know each other over lunch. And then when you get into your discussion group, excuse me, we have, I tore my schedule up now. I think I got another one though. I got another one here. Yes, your first discussion group is actually going to be after coffee. And following your discussion group, have lunch together, get to know each other. And we're not wanting you to discuss the issues so much in your discussion group as to work out a priority list of the issues. What issues that you and the group feel are the most important ones? And you have to discuss the issues a little bit to understand what they are, but then don't get into a deep discussion on them, but try to prioritize them as a group as to what the group thinks are the most important issues. Same way on the negative side, prioritize what things you think need to be dropped in the schedule. Okay? Now, if we need more time, we can continue on key issues this afternoon. If we don't, then we will go into the discussion on the philosophy. And the discussion group leaders will lead those. And the only thing you have to do to prepare for discussion on the philosophy is to read the first few pages of the community ministry questionnaire to see what the compiled summary is on philosophy. And I think that goes right up to one and two. Okay, why don't you pass that out right now while I wind up and we get Jim up here. Any questions so far of what we said? Yes. Yes. Yeah, first of all, as you look at the schedule, this morning we're not following that first two-hour session. We're giving orientation. We're going to... we're going to have to move everything up one section. There will be no discussion on philosophy this afternoon. We will discuss key issues. Thank you. Okay. I'd like to just say that in this schedule that we've worked out, we've actually have figured out spaces of time. And we have right now, counting lunch times as interaction times and so on, we have 88 possible interaction times compared to 19 instruction times. So the conference is very much geared toward interaction. We can change that if you think we should. Now what I'm going to ask Jim Kennedy to do is to share with us something on formulating enabling guidelines and also the physical aspects of our time together.